All right, Eric Hexter, CIO, CTO, who's the bigger nerd?
I mean, I have to think through that, but I think a CTO. And that's just because we got to dive into all the little nitty-gritty details.
Well, I mean, just by the way you answered that, I'm going to say CTO, because mine was just going to be like an off-the-cuff joke about, like, aren't we both big, giant nerds? So
we are.
All right, everybody, all that and more on Transformers. What does transformation mean, and what can we learn from the people leading the way? Join me as I talk to my fellow nerds about business, technology, and even a little bit about their humanity along the way. I'm Anne Fanai, CIO and Vice President of Business Platform Transformation at IBM, and this is Transformers, a Think podcast. Today, I'd like to welcome Eric Hexter, CTO of Alia, a financial services startup company. And I should say, full disclosure, a very special nerd in my life. He is my significant other, my longtime partner, whatever term we use at middle age for such fun things. Sorry, did I start off embarrassing you appropriately enough?
No, it's perfect.
It's perfect. Great. One of the reasons I wanted to have you join the podcast is, you know, not only are you incredibly smart, and I mean, you challenge me intellectually, like every day I learn something new from you, but you've also got a fascinating career. You know, you started out as a mechanical engineer and had this winding thread out of engineering, consulting, large companies, small companies, e-commerce, fintech, and just wondering if you could, you know, talk a little bit about your journey.
So yeah, Eric Hexter, CTO of Alia Financial Technologies. We are a startup that uses AI, or a combination of generative and machine learning, to help banks and other financial institutions create products, you know, loan products, risk-based products, in a way that you know, they might not have the capabilities or expertise to do that themselves. So, you know, that's what we do. We currently have a you know, probably one of the top eight largest banks in the U.S. as a customer. We just launched a pilot with last week. So
you did not sleep very well. None of your sleep scores were you product launch in a startup world, which I'm going to come back and pick your brain about in a minute here. But, you know, I kind of want to jump real quick, though, into a little bit of your past and your history. Mm-hmm. You know, you started as a mechanical engineer, and you started out coming out of Ohio University. Like, so as fellow Clevelanders, you know, we can only hope to emulate Rob Harvilla and his 60 songs that explain the 90s podcast, our fellow Clevelander here. But, you know, you started out, you went to Ohio University, mechanical engineer, and you started out working at the Cadillac plant in Detroit, though. Could you, like, kind of go through that weird, circuitous route to where you end up as a CTO here?
Yeah. Ended up at the Cadillac plant in Detroit through EDS, Electronic Data Systems. So they did all of the IT and systems for General Motors at the time. Started through there, did engineering, also worked on the systems. I think the first thing I did in the 6 months was a engine tracking system for the plant as it married up with the body. So went from there, got into quality, inside quality metrology inside of the body shop. It was all still system-based, right? We're doing Six Sigma and things like that, you know, back in the mid-90s before it got applied to business and everything we know of it today in terms of being black belts and all those things. From there, went to a supplier. I think I traveled to about 60 of the 90 auto plants in the U.S. in 2 years following that, putting in systems, troubleshooting networks, you know, all of the things that happen when you have to go deploy a system inside of an auto plant. From there, decided Michigan and Ohio was too cold, so went to San Diego, did some dot-com stuff, and ended up at Callaway Golf. So did the websites, consumer database building, kind of all of the consumer-facing things at Callaway. And then along the way, they purchased a startup in Austin. That's what moved me here and got me into the e-commerce space. So, kind of, you know, bridge manufacturing, bridge marketing, bridged e-commerce, and then you know, stayed in Austin from there. That was around 2004. Did some consulting. That was like, you know, that was right when kind of the whole agile and extreme programming stuff had been kind of kicked off in the community space, and a lot of it was happening in Austin at the time. So, you know, got involved in that, got involved in the user groups from that. So that's kind of what I think what did it was when I was leaving California, coming to Texas, I didn't have a huge community. I didn't have a network. So I decided, you know, first thing I do when I landed here was, you know, get involved. And that looked like, you know, user groups, those kind of things. And then it, you know, quickly went from being a member to, hey, now I'm helping run it, running some community-based events. I think mentioned code camps. So back then, 2007 was kind of when...
when they just started coming out.
Code camps were like, the idea behind it was, you know, we're going to make conferences that are by practitioners for practitioners. You might not have the funding for your company to afford to send you something. So they did it, you know, on the weekends. We tried to make it as practical as possible and as free as possible. So that even included, you know, trying to find sponsors for the spaces. And I ran a couple of those. And after that, I got into building some online conferences that ended up being kind of the precursors for a lot of the online conferences that you see today.
Let me kind of go back, though. One thing that's interesting, though, too, so talk to a couple other guests on the podcast about, you know, open source and the communities of open source. Let me try to bridge that with what you did, though, in communities, because you are actually a .NET developer is how you came up. I know you said, you know, programming has been the common thread through being a mechanical engineer, but as a .NET developer, you're building kind of a community around proprietary frameworks, but it is something that is in the open source community. Like, what was that evolution like?
Yeah, so, you know, today, right, Microsoft really supports open source. They're putting a lot of money behind it, but that was at the time, you know, when we still were on the verge of, you know, open source is evil versus, hey, maybe it's not that evil. I was actually, I was thinking about this. One of the projects I was working on was the first non-Microsoft project accepted into, at the time, it was called the CodePlex Foundation. So it was an open source foundation. It's defunct now and, you know, for something that's more on brand with Microsoft. But it was interesting at the time because even, you know, the people I worked with at Microsoft were kind of, you know, pushing for it, trying to fight their internal battles for what open source means and how to support it. But, we've come, you know, 180 degrees from where we were before.
So my first go around with IBM, I led software for IBM's power systems and looked at the open power framework to open source, basically, created the Open Power Foundation, the chip design went out there. But one of the things we had to do along with that was open source the core firmware. And I remember just the struggle of this move from proprietary, like, are you putting the crown jewels out there? And I mean, my perspective on that had always been the more eyes on it, you know, you're going to really see how good you are, or do you just think you're good? Is this something that, is going to have legs that people are going to take off? And what did you see in that regard in the space that you were in?
You know, that Microsoft space was, you kind of had two camps. You either had people that only wanted, you know, what was provided from Microsoft, then you had the other camp, which was like, let's take everything that the Java community, that all of these other communities that have already, you know, embraced open source, like, you know, let's take what they're doing and figure out how it works. So it took a while. I mean, I feel like now, you know, if I could look back on it, it's really evolved into what we hoped it would. Along the way, you know, I remember us kind of beating our heads. I'm like, wow, we got this, but, you know, the licensing on this other thing is still closed and we need it. But yeah, it just took time to deprecate things, I guess.
Well, and if I can brag on you a little bit, I think part of what was interesting about the community as you go through and you were kind of like leading the user groups and became CodeCamps is like over your shoulders there is a book you co-authored. So how did that come out about? What was the process? I know a lot of folks are like, how do you even do something like that? How do you fall into that? Like, how did that come about for you?
So I actually literally fell into it. It was being involved in kind of the user groups, being involved with some of the people there. And then one of the companies I was consulting with was led by the main author. So it just kind of made sense that, hey, he's looking for authors. I'd always been interested in it, but never wanted to be a main author. So co-author was like, hey, you could take these chapters. Like, that is perfect. I can, kind of dip my toe in it without having to do all of the work.
One thing, again, I found fascinating about your career is like, again, you were tied so much to .NET. And like, even now that's really... You're very ambidextrous with all of your languages, but like that's kind of what you fall back to. Is like, what has it been like working? I know you developed some really strong relationships at Microsoft. How has that evolved for you with those connections over time? Like staying tight to that, to kind of the core languages and that community versus when you're not really part of that company?
My community is kind of like, the MVPs, all these people that are kind of ancillary to the product team. But, I guess if we looked at it now, we call them influencers, right? There are people who did presentations, those things like to the user groups and at tech events. But, I still keep in touch with them. I still work with some of them on a day-to-day. I run into them and say, hey, I'm actually doing this thing on AWS or a different technology stack. And a bunch of them are doing that as well. So it's pretty interesting to have that kind of thing to fall back on, but also know that they're all evolving as well. So
yeah. It's one of the themes kind of through some of these episodes we're seeing is like what a small world it is too. Like,
it really is.
I think we even talked about how, like, again, we met in Austin, both grew up in Cleveland, like not far from each other in Cleveland, and being in our spaces, we probably joke, we probably passed each other at a zillion conferences over the last decade. And, just the right moment happened, but it's such a small tech world. Yeah. So I'm going to poke a little bit now. You talked about Alia and what you guys are doing with AI as the cornerstone for it. And again, obviously, I have very firsthand knowledge of what it took to get your product out, get your product launch. And obviously, as an IBM employee, I thank you for looking at our Granite models alongside of some of the other models you're looking at and building. But would love for you to like share a little bit more about not just what you're doing with Alia, but what do you see? You've been in fintech now for 10-ish years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I know we were debating that last night. Like, how old are we? But how do you see the evolution now with everything in AI playing into the fintech space specifically?
Wow, that's a good question.
I didn't mean to stump you. I'm sorry.
You may have stumped me. Starting out in 2013, we're doing machine learning, right? Neural networks, kind of, logistic regressions, all of that. And at the time, like nobody was talking about that. That felt bleeding edge in 2013. And it just, everything evolves so fast, right? If that was the only thing we were doing now, you'd be like, why are you even bothering? That's not even AI anymore, right? Mm-hmm. And if I look at some of, financial institutions, they don't even know how to really utilize a lot of the technologies that, they're just getting to the point of looking at neural networks, logistic regressions. Yes, they have done it. Can they figure out how to take it and put it into production and really do it at something that's kind of core to their business? That's, that's a little harder, especially when you look at regulatory and compliance and all of the things you really need to worry about not only in finance, but, any large corporation. Where we're really going with kind of all the generative technologies, that's huge. I think it will still massively transform, how the banking industry works today.
Do you see kind of a kismet, like a place where you would like it to go? Like what would be kind of your dream for, like, if you stayed in this fintech space, like what would you love the next generation of the technology to look like?
I mean, I think I kind of already hit on that. Regulatory and compliance, like we are trying to currently... explain how it works to regulators that they really have a hard time understanding, you know, what a neural network is, let alone, you know, what is the latest technology work. So, you know, when I see AI evolving, it really needs to get to the point where it's explainable. You know, how did it come up with the answers it did? Can it really kind of generate its own kind of audit log for, hey, you know, here are the series of steps that I went through? Because that's, in order for it to be usable, that's really what we got to get to.
Yeah, no, and that's come up in just everyday conversations I've been having just at work, and you know, other CIOs has been, it's the need for governance. It's like governance is about like, is it transparent? Is it repeatable? Do you know, the heritage of all the data coming through, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that would be a nice dream to have the AI tell you that itself, right?
Yeah, it should know all the requirements and decide, hey, did I, you know, based on the user I'm being a proxy for, am I accessing data I'm allowed to access, right? You know, based in finance, it's, you know, there's consumer protection laws, kind of all these other pieces, but I think that applies, you know, almost anywhere in a corporation and inside business.
Let me do a little bit of a pivot, because you hit on this a little bit, and I've kind of joked about how little sleep you've gotten in the last few weeks, but it's, you know, one thing I think I found interesting with all of our conversations over the years has been like kind of large company versus small company perspective in tech. And so for me in my career is like big company. And then I went out to a couple private equity owned, and then a mid-sized company, and then, you know, private equity, and then came back to IBM. And like, I feel like my niche is, I'll call it a $1 billion and up company for CIO, CTO role. And you've done the same thing, right? You were at Dell, you were at Callaway, but then you went consulting, and now you've been doing a series of smaller things, but you've tended the other way. And I just think this is a fun conversation to share, because, I mean, for me, I like the moving of the pieces, right? Like, it's, to me, my brain looks at the technology problems like a puzzle piece. Like, how do you fit that puzzle piece in there? How do you make that work? How do you turning the cruise ship, so to speak, and versus, you know, and don't get me wrong, we're deploying some stuff over New Year's here, which I'm definitely going to be watching and for every incident that could possibly happen. But in your case, like, there is no one else. Like, it's you and a small team, and it doesn't happen if you don't build it. Like, I guess I know what I kind of gave the highlights of why I ended up where I was. Like, what drove you to that more small, I'll say, you know, early venture capital seed round type of company?
That's a great question. Oh, you know, what makes me crazy enough to take this on? I enjoyed some of the big company, you know, initiatives and work and scale, but I also enjoy filling the hole, which it's really hard to say, hey, you know, I think at a big company, you'd be like, hey, let's do this Skunk Works or this R&D thing. And you actually, in most cases, have to justify the direction of R&D. Whereas at a startup, you know, you have somebody who believes in the idea and is very passionate about it, and they're going to put a bunch of money behind it. They have no idea who can build it or what they, you know, how it can come together. And, you know, that's what I love doing. So I've just been lucky enough to find the companies that, you know, want to basically kind of reinvent how we're doing something. In my case, it's, you know, risk analysis of loans, but I wouldn't say that was an area I've always dreamed about getting into.
Oh, what, you didn't like it? Yeah. That's how you're like, oh, you're 10 years old. I want to design risk analysis.
Like, how does the amortization schedule work? You know, but I, you know, once I got into it and I, you know, kind of got involved in it and saw that we were really changing how things can work and be, you know, 30 times, 50, 100 times more efficient than, you know, some of the manual processes, that it just, you know, that part's exciting.
Yeah. No, and I remember one of the other conversations we've had was like, so, you know, I'm in a very pure CIO role. I had, you know, SVP of engineering at Under Armour and the PE company I work for. I had a hybrid, like I had all the CTO function, but I also had the CIO function. And we were talking, I think you just said last night, you said, well, at some point, if you're the CIO too, though, at a startup at the stage, like, you're going to be like fixing people's laptops too, right? And like, what's your experience been with kind of those hybrid versus more pure roles?
I mean, I've always said, you know, like, I love the idea of being a CTO, CIO. Like, no, thank you. Like, that's just not something I want to do because it comes with all those things. It comes with the governance and all those other pieces. But, you know, at a smaller company, a startup, you know, I can at least say, hey, you know, let's outsource, you know, managing the laptops, managing security, managing some of the things for the internally where, you know, then I get to worry about all the product stuff. The building of products are, you know, that's really what I enjoy. I look at what you do and I know I can't do it. Like moving a large organization and being able to jump into all of the small pieces and figure out problems and still kind of go back up the high level and say, okay, is that right for the cruise ship of where it needs to turn?
Yeah.
You know, that's something that you do very well. And I've seen you navigate it and it's, you know, it's just, oh yeah, that is definitely not in my wheelhouse.
Well, I mean, and vice versa, just the way, you know, everything you've had to debug and like it's 24/7, you're getting, oh, here's another pull request. I got to go deal with this. And, you know, we were trying to watch our Browns lose again yesterday and you're in a team's meeting while we're watching football. And it's just, I always say I couldn't do what you do, right? It's like, it's a lot. You can't really pigeonhole the CIO, CTO role, I think is, you know, really what it comes down to.
Yeah. I think there's a large spectrum of what the job can be and trying to find, you know, the right company and the right needs are definitely a huge piece of finding kind of the right, you know, your right path.
One of the main themes for this podcast too is the fact that we're all human. So, you know, my hope is our audience is not just folks who are CIOs and CTOs looking to kind of hear tidbits about other things, but, you know, folks who aspire to be in the seats we're in. And so the piece of humanity I thought would be really fun for you. Again, let's bring it back to, you know, our full disclosure that we're a couple. We had a conversation when we first started dating that it's almost a little scary how much the same person we were having, you know, born in the same place, met down here, similar career paths. But the one thing we found out is really different is how we like to spend our free time. So for me, I like utter peace, quiet, silence, a book in a quiet room, maybe some music playing in the background. My introvert starts to hurt after a little bit. But you take a really different approach. And I thought, like, it's just such a, it's like back to your mechanical engineering roots and where you started in the Cadillac plant. Like, we pulled this whole thread of your career, that software was the constant. But I think just recently you've got a new hobby that has pigeonholed into other hobbies that I think is a really cool human aspect for you.
Yeah. I mean, I got into building rebuilding some, you know, really old trucks. You know, I never owned a diesel before and it turned into, okay, I need to learn how to weld. It's an aluminum body. So I got to go take a class on TIG welding. And then I got a second and the engine didn't work. So let's figure out how to rebuild an engine. And for me, it's, again, I like doing it by myself. I like, you know, in the same part, it's part of me recharging, but for me, recharging is also kind of building and learning. And recently that's also turned into a bit of AI as well.
Yes, it has.
Within the same projects. I definitely, I'm not sure it's creative, but it's definitely one of the things that I need to work on something and feel like I've made progress in order for me to come back and, you know, be in a good mental place for, you know, whatever the work week requires of me.
You need your garage breaks and, you know, I will give up my parking space in the garage for your happiness. So thank you for joining. I really appreciate it. I know, I think, you know, this might be probably the weirdest conversation we've had since we met. I think you've got such a fascinating history. You are you've got a really cool job and you're, you know, just super smart. And I wanted to have you on. So thanks for doing that.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us today on Transformers. Truly hope you enjoyed the conversation and hope to see you back next time.